This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. How do you eat sustainably? Meaning, you know, in a way that's good for your health and for the environment. That is the topic of a newsletter out today from our climate team here at WBUR. It's called Cooked, The Search for Sustainable Eats. And in this week's edition of From the Newsroom here on the show, we are talking with three reporters who tried to eat sustainably. No plastic, or all vegan, or hyperlocal. And the best I can tell, how it started was not really how it went. So here with us, Martha Biebinger, WBUR health reporter, Andrea Shea, WBUR arts reporter, and Barbara Moran, WBUR environmental correspondent. Martha, welcome.
Hi, Tiziana.
Andrea, Barb, hey there.
Hey.
Hey.
All right, so Barb, I'm going to start with you and this idea for Cooked, because I understand that this came from something having to do with vegan cheese.
Yeah. So that happened a little bit before the vegan cheese when I was reporting on the last big UN climate report, and I was feeling very overwhelmed by the climate crisis and wondering what I could do. And a lot of people say, you know, eating vegan is the best thing you can do, right? So I'm in the grocery store and I'm looking at this packet of like vegan cheese, and it's made with all this stuff. I don't even know what was in it, like coconut oil and all this, and it's in a plastic bag and it's hyper processed. And I'm like, really?
This is the best way.
Is this really good for the planet? Like, what about this nice little ball of mozzarella from the farm? This seems better than this. And like, I didn't know, right? And I had all these like questions. Is this really better? And so I'm like, well, let's find out.
So what's interesting is, so you worked with some grad students from Tufts. Yeah. They did a little research for you to go into the newsletter, and they looked at things like, you know, which sweetener has the lowest environmental impact. And it was interesting. One of your big takeaways was that there's a lot we don't know. The existing research is actually pretty incomplete on the environmental impact of how we eat.
Yeah, there's a ton of research that's been done on sort of greenhouse gas emissions and water use for various farm products. But that's where the bulk of it is. And that's the bulk of environmental impacts from agriculture. But, you know, there's a ton of other environmental impacts, you know, on like biodiversity and carbon sequestration in the soil and, you know, everything else. And it just doesn't exist yet. One of my guys I interviewed said it's like the early days of like Galileo looking at the planets. Like, that's how he feels like where the research is now.
So there's a lot of work to do. Martha, yeah. I'll turn to you for a second. You're a health reporter. Why did you want in on this? Especially, you signed up for something that seems kind of torturous, which is to try to shop with zero plastic. Why sign up for this?
Well, there's a growing body of evidence about the impact of plastic on health. And I won't dive into that now because it would take over the conversation. But you might have seen that research out of, I think it was Australia a little while back, that said the upshot is we consume about a credit card's worth of plastic a week.
You mean into our bodies?
Yeah.
I eat a credit card a week.
And a lot of that comes in through water. A lot of that comes in through, not necessarily Massachusetts water, but water in parts of the world. But in any case, I thought, you know, I don't want to be ingesting a ton of plastic. So I'm going to see if I can just live without it for a week. And that, yeah, it was partly health, and it was partly just sort of trying to understand, trying to get a little bit more aware of what I was buying and how I was taking it in.
And Andrea, how about you? You're an arts reporter. You already were eating fairly healthy, fairly local. But this was next level local. Why'd you do it?
Well, I mean, I love cooking. I think about food probably too much. And I care about what I...
He thinks about it all the time.
True.
Me too.
And, you know, I mean, I care about what I eat. I care about what I put in my body. I care about what I feed my kids, which can be another matter. But I thought it would be fun. Initially, kind of like pushing myself into this kind of lived experiment with my body and what I put into it. And I thought it would force me to be creative. I thought, of course, that it would challenge my assumptions, which it did. But it also just kind of floored me for a week of, you know, I think about food a lot, but in this case, I was thinking about it from the moment I woke up until the moment I went to bed.
So Andrea and Martha, your endeavors were for a week and you had a budget limit. Is that correct from both of you, Andrea?
Oh, yeah.
And Martha, you too,
right? That
was
the assignment, yes.
Okay. Now, Barbara, you were a month back in January. Was there a, so you had a time period that was longer. Did you have a budget threshold too?
No, I think I snuck in before there was a budget. So yeah, I was just
lucky
winging
you.
It, okay. Throwing money around.
All right. And now on the count of three, I'm going to have you guys all answer the next question at the same time. Mm. So wait, the question is, did you succeed? One, two, three.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is where we want to dive in next. And Barbara, I'll come back to you. And I'm actually going to bring your kids right into this.
Uh-oh.
From the beginning, Barbara. One of the things that we hear in your reporting that we loved was Finn, 14, your son, reacting to some of the stuff that you brought home during this month that you tried to eat vegan, which you were not before. You weren't even vegetarian. We're talking nutritional yeast, vegan chorizo. And here he is asking you, honestly, why?
Why? What are you doing
about
me?
It's just better for you. Us. The planet.
You think that's better for the planet?
I don't know. That's the question, right?
It's probably not.
And did he like it?
Did he like it? No. Oh, no. No. And I was talking to him about this yesterday. He has not changed his tune at all. No. He's still not into the vegan thing. He's very into meat. That was the big question I was trying to answer, you know, at the beginning. Like, is, like, soy chorizo and vegan cheese actually better? And it is. Not to blow everything in the newsletter, but it is actually better. It has lower greenhouse gas emissions and lower water use and all those things. But, you know, doesn't necessarily mean it worked in my house.
And what was the hardest part in that month eating vegan for you? And I understand, you know, you'd been gluten-free prior because you were diagnosed 15 years ago with celiac disease. So you were used to a slightly more limited diet that you started at a time when it was not well known or well accommodated.
Yeah.
So even with that in mind, what was the hardest part?
Yeah. Well, like Andrea, I thought the good part was that it did make me sort of reassess how I eat and sort of shake it up. Like, I'm a working mom and we have like seven meals that we circulate through, right? But like the hardest part was the kids. Right. Like finding stuff that they would want to eat and just getting them to eat and dealing with their complaining.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either. I did not even attempt to pull my 18-year-old son into
You just
this.
Did it yourself.
Yeah.
So, Andrea, you and Martha, just for listeners, Andrea's here in the studio. Martha's on the line. The two of you had some real grocery shopping challenges as well, whereas Barbara, there was a little more room to breathe there. So talk about how hard it was to shop, Martha.
Well, I walked into the grocery store thinking, like, I know what plastic looks like. I know what food it's on. And I was completely wrong. I spent a ton of time, I remember, in the oil aisle, tapping on lids to figure out if they were plastic or metal, putting them in my cart, and then 15 minutes later realizing, oh, the label is plastic. Oh. I got to go put that back. So I walked in circles in the grocery store, picking things up and putting them back. And then when I got to the checkout line, I was loading my stuff onto the cart and I saw all these little plastic stickers on the pepper or on the onion or them, like, and they had put a plastic sticker on the meat because, of course, you can't buy any meat that isn't already in plastic. So I went to the counter and got it, but they put a plastic sticker with the poundage and the price. And, you know, so it was just like, it felt like a lesson in futility.
It honestly sounds demoralizing, Martha.
Well, at the end, I just bought that pepper because I was too pissed off. I was like, I'm going to have to chalk this up. I ended up with a violation list. That's why I answered no to your question, because I ended up with a violation.
You had a violation list. And Andrea, did you have a violation list too? And you have to pull in this Marco Polo exception in your answer, because this is fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually oddly kind of encouraged to have cheats. Not encouraged.
And I'm sorry, I should remind listeners, you were hyper local.
Yeah. So why don't I'll define what a hardcore locavore, which I am not. But basically, locavores, which are people that really focus on eating sustainably and locally, they generally are eating between 150 mile and 100 and 150 miles from their home, so mm-hmm. a radius of that distance. And so my editors gave me 200 miles. The USDA often uses for various things regarding agriculture to define it as local, they use 400 miles. So a 200-mile radius, which sounded like a gift at first, is really tricky. I basically, to speak to Martha, going into the grocery store when I went to Stop and Shop is my first place to attempt to find things I'd be able to eat for the week, I just GPSed everything. And so, and then when I walked in there in the produce aisle, there was a shelf, not very large, that said, buy local. Mm. And I went over there, but it was all food that was made locally. So condiments and salsa and even roasted coffee, which of course coffee is, we have many, countless, frankly, it seems, local coffee roasters, but none of the beans are local.
Yeah, I'd be done right there.
Yeah.
I'd be done.
Yeah.
Well, that's the exception. Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Right. So getting to the exception. So, I mean, I was able, I kind of went into this without doing too much pre-research, thinking that it would be more interesting and perhaps more authentic to kind of have this lived experience as it was happening organically.
Yeah.
So I really was learning on the fly. And I did, you know, coffee was the first thing that I knew I wasn't going to be able to have, which I did not anticipate the kind of I've gone through coffee withdrawal before, but not realizing when you want to be sharp and you want to be on it. So I was kind of falling apart a little bit. So feeling a little scattered, feeling like, what have I done to myself?
So what was the exception? What did you give yourself?
So about, I think it was day
Martha
four.
Martha took the pepper. Yeah. What was yours?
Well, day four, day five, Barbara let me in on something that's called the Marco Polo exception.
Yeah.
Which locavores use, because olive oil. Not being able to use olive oil or oil. I'm not a big butter fan. I ended up finding butternut squash seed oil from a local farm, which I ended up loving. Nutty, $15 a bottle, I think, for maybe 8 ounces.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So the pantry items.
Your budget.
Oh, yeah, the pantry items. I mean, salt, things like that. So those would be exceptions that you could work into this Marco Polo existence, including perhaps beer.
Well, actually, we're going to talk about some local brews after the break, so that will be an interesting opportunity to explore that. Martha, I'm going to come back to you for a second. Just briefly, I'm going to play a little sound from a person you talked to at a zero-waste location that you found a shop at. And there were even things you couldn't get there that were plastic-free. So here's Greg Sednoy, general manager at Pemberton Farms in Cambridge, giving a bit of a look at why that is.
There was so much forward momentum in zero waste, especially in the Boston area before COVID. But customers wanted peace of mind. They didn't want a broken seal. They didn't want anything that had already been touched by anybody else. And I think we've just gone in reverse in a lot of ways.
As a health reporter, how did that resonate with you, Martha?
That was super discouraging because I think, you know, not only were we already moving in the direction of plastic used in food packaging increasing, but now we've instituted some habits during COVID that I think are going to be even tougher for some of us to break. So if you want to try to shop plastic-free, it's just going to become, it is becoming, it already has become, and may become even more difficult.
So Barb, on that note, I turn back to you. Some discouraging stories here, and yet, as you're working on Cooked, you're finding there are little things we can do. So what are a couple of things that aren't as overwhelming as what the three of you tried that people can actually do?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, there such little things can make a huge difference. Just swapping out, like, beef for chicken one meal a week actually makes a huge difference, you know? Paying attention to where your vegetables are coming from. Talking, I think the thing that makes the biggest difference is asking your grocery store or restaurant where their food comes from, because they really pay attention to consumers. So I think people have a lot more power than they think. And I think that's why the best part of the newsletter is I want it to be really empowering to people who are concerned about climate change and want to make a difference.
Andrea, briefly, biggest change you've made that'll be permanent?
Biggest change that'll be permanent. Well, I mean, stepping foot in a grocery store will never be the same again.
There you go.
It's overwhelming. And it really, to be surrounded by bottles and boxes and cans of foods that are coming from all over the place. And it really speaks to how susceptible our food supply chain system is. And if it went down for real, it would just be devastating. Mm-hmm. So knowing, you know, part of the reason to support local farms and to support local things that are closer to you is creating a more resilient food system for everyone. And it creates community. And just knowing the people that are handling your food, that's... And the care that they put into it, that's one of my biggest takeaways.
That's fantastic. Martha, how about you? Quickly, just one permanent change for you.
I'm going to make a lot more of my own stuff. Hummus, for example. Yeah. I'm really struggling on the yogurt. If anybody has tips, let me know.
Plastic-free yogurt?
Yeah.
Got it. All right. You heard it, folks. Let's help Martha out with that one. We're all on Twitter. You can help us there. Barbara, how do we get the newsletter? How do people sign up?
WBUR.org/cooked.
All right. Barbara Moran, environmental correspondent, Martha Biebinger, health reporter, Andrea Shea, arts reporter, all here at WBUR from our newsroom. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you, Deanna. That was fun.
Thank you.
Have a great day.